This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9. I'm Philip C and welcome to the Breakfast Grill. Now on today's Breakfast Grill, we are in conversation with His Excellency Milan Hupse. He's the ambassador of the Czech Republic. Now for many Malaysians, we have romantic visuals of the Gothic spires of the beautiful cathedrals in Prague. But beyond its touristic delights, its strategic location at the heart of Europe reflects the critical role it has in shaping European goals, particularly in these time of uncertainties. Very warm welcome, Ambassador, to the Breakfast Grill. How are you doing?
Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity for sharing my views and have a nice conversation. I believe we will have with you. I'm ready to share.
We can't avoid the conversation about what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. And one observes that the Czech Republic has really taken a very strong stand in support of Ukraine. You have committed to send tanks, infantry, fighting vehicles. You have provided badly needed heavy weapons to support the Ukraine troops that are battling a much better equipped Russian invasion force. Why is the Czech Republic's stand on this so clear and muscular against Russia?
I think we have very good historical reasons for that. Because in 1968, we had Russian invasion into Czechoslovakia. When Czechoslovakia at that time tried to reform old socialist system. And after Prague Spring in 68, it was crushed by Russian tanks. And only in 89 or early 90, we finally succeed to get rid and send all these Russians troops home. And since that, since 68, for us, relations with Russia or Soviet Union were very much affected by that fact. Second attack on sovereign country as Ukraine is, we consider as attack on freedom and democracy. And the Russian leadership should face consequences on that action. There was absolutely no second, I think, in among our people, that we started to help Ukrainians in every possible way. You know, Ukraine is very close to our border because it former Czechoslovakia had a border with Ukraine. Now it's Slovakia, but it's only a few hundred kilometers away. And even before war, we had very strong Ukrainian community in our country. That's almost around 170,000 Ukrainian people who lived and worked in a big way. To a big wave of the immigration came in 2014, after the first conflict in Donbas area.
You spelled out very clearly why the stand of Czech Republic, but are you frustrated that many of your neighbors are not as strident or it's not clear in their position against Russia? Because there is a bit of wavering, isn't it? You see that in Hungary, even Germany, although they have upped their defense spending, they're also wavering a bit, isn't it? There is that challenge that the EU is not united against Russia.
I would not say this as strictly as you said. Of course, every country has their own interests we have to take into consideration. But I think that generally as a NATO or European Union, we're still moving united. Because there was a new package of sanctions was adopted after that horrible atrocity which we were witnessing in the Ukrainian town of Bucha. I think that every country has to balance between their own interests and then, of course, international obligations. But in general, the massive material and financial help from European countries and NATO is going to Ukraine. So that I would not see that as a big issue.
You talked about the incidences in Bucha and the horrifying images there. Do you think Vladimir Putin is a war criminal?
I think that what that happens, it is really war crimes we have everywhere. Because shelling cities like Mariupol, even Kharkiv or Kherson. That is something anybody could imagine in 20th century. And of course, Vladimir Putin is responsible because he issued an order to start a war.
So in your estimation, he is a war criminal then?
Of course, that is the International Criminal Court has to decide. It's difficult for me to, because one may say we have only one side information, but at least what we see that a lot of war crimes happen and many, many civilians, innocent people were killed. So I would let it to International Court to judge.
A couple of weeks back, three European prime ministers, including your prime minister, risked a train ride to visit the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, at Kiev. Ambassador, was that trip a success? What were the outcomes of that trip?
I think it was the aim of the trip was to encourage Ukraine President Zelensky, because all the talks like we are talking now, or video or audio nowadays, it is one thing, but once you see somebody personally, shake his hand, see his eyes, hear his voice, this is very good moral support. I think from that point of view, there is absolutely no doubt, because we as a neighbor, we sharing a lot of common things. That's why I think that the stand of my prime minister, and actually I'm very proud of what he did, because there was not many countries. Now it's following up. Now we see that President of European Parliament and the other countries are going there. But it was very good example how we do just morally support.
Yeah, I have to say that train ride really did shape the discussion, and I think really showed the physical solidarity and support that many former Eastern European blocs, you know, wanted to convey to their brother in Ukraine. But I want to test you whether the support has its limits. You know, we have seen conversations and announcements that, you know, with the influx of immigrants and flow of these refugees from Ukraine, there is a limit to the support, isn't it? The social infrastructure and systems in your country cannot take all these refugees, can it?
So far, we are doing quite well. As I said before, we had 170,000. They were well accommodated, working, and so on. And now, according to just yesterday, when I checked the Czech immigration department, we officially issued a refugee status to 267,000 Ukrainian people. Those people are mostly women and children. So we try to do as possible. And the wave of solidarity is going through all countries, and because those people are spread in all areas. They are, and we provide for them from the very beginning, social security, health security. We are trying to put instantly kids into the school. And this is going everywhere. And so far, we do not see any big issue, big problems. But of course, our country is small. We are only 10 million people. We cannot accept, you know, million or two.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder what the limit is, right? Because, you know, your interior minister did warn that Prague Center for Registering Refugees is overwhelmed. It was even forced to close for a couple of days. And even the Czech government had to impose a state of emergency in order for government machinery to cope with the influx. So where is that threshold? What is the maximum number of refugees that the Czech Republic can take?
I'm afraid I can't tell you, because you know, you always can test your limit. You always can go higher if you try. that is possible. Of course, the Prague, because majority people go to Prague. There was, if I'm not mistaken, over 60,000 people already is in Prague. But we are trying to spread or to distribute, or I don't know, to use a nice word, to allocate these people to the regions, because there are some regions are still have a capacity. Of course, now we are in quite good position, because we, you know, the Czech Republic is very strong incoming tourist country. Yeah. And we have a lot of accommodation, a lot of facilities around in the countries, in the different places. And tourist season didn't start yet, so that's we are allocated there. But our government, as you said, emergency law, it is because we have very strict law about the procurement, about all these, you know, competition and tenders. It would take much, much longer than normally. So that everything you should do in emergency quickly. So that's why the law was actually adopted. It's not because we cannot absorb the people. It is about the administration, to speed up the administration.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder whether the government is supportive, but perhaps the limits will be tested for your citizens, right? As you said, you are a beautiful country with a huge amount of tourism assets, just unexploited yet or unused because of the pandemic. But as we enter the summer season, when markets reopen, will people say there has been lost business opportunity and trade opportunities because it was filled by all these refugees then?
All right. Meanwhile, our government, or our, mostly it's not government, central government, but the local administration are working hard to accommodate those people to, let's say, to some families, because a lot of families are accepting them. And that's why our government is supporting that. It is paying the host families, host household, let's say, to accommodate and to accept the people. So that's why I think that is very good. It's very good solution, because many people are ready. They have big houses, and then the family, the kids has gone, and so they are accepting them. And this is the way. What is the limit? It's absolutely impossible to say, but I think that still we are doing quite well, and so far there are no reported any kind of bad sentiments.
The Czech Republic joined NATO in 1999 and then followed by the EU in 2004, would you support Ukraine's accession into NATO and EU?
Yes, I would support, but of course to enter that organization, there's a lot of conditions. And of course we know that to join, for example, the EU, Ukraine doesn't, it's not qualified yet, because it is you have to change totally, we call it acquis communautaire, that's your legal system compatible with EU countries, and I'm not sure that Ukraine has done it, but we can give Ukraine access status, and of course we can help Ukrainian to change their system right. That's compatible with the EU, and of course there is a lot of technical economical support to speed it up.
We've been talking a lot about, you know, the clear position the Czech Republic has, right, in support of Ukraine, but I also note that you actually studied at the prestigious Moscow State of Institute of International Relations in the 1970s, which was quite a long time ago, but very much when the Iron Curtain was very much clearly intact. Do you get a sense of the remnants of Cold War taking place in this conflict? Is this a very different conflict from where you were when you were studying, or has this really evolved or changed?
Of course it is. As you said, 77 till 83 was a very, very different time. And of course, when studying, me and my colleagues from many Eastern Bloc countries and many countries even from Afghanistan, from Vietnam, Cambodia, whatever, that there were students. Because we felt under surveillance, we felt under control. We couldn't move, by the way, freely across Soviet Union. There was a lot of restrictions. So, and as young people, of course, we were not fighting, but quarreling with our local friends and telling them that the system is not good, because it's not building the competition. It's not competitive. It's not
so you were a closet Democrat then?
That time we of course, we would like to change system. We would like to come with the idea, because we clearly said that it doesn't have a future if it would maintain like that.
And I think fast forward now, when we talk about the future, people are contemplating that a key feature of our future is energy security. And that is what is causing so much division, isn't it, within the EU, that we are still weaned and over-reliant on gas and oil from Russia. But what I think is very interesting with the Czech Republic is that you have taken concerted efforts to actually secure energy security through nuclear. Perhaps could you share the journey in terms of how did the Czech Republic decide that it wanted to take charge of its own energy security so that it wasn't over-reliant with external providers?
You know, my country was Czechoslovakia, now Czechia or Czech Republic. We do not have many natural resources. We always try to be innovative, industrial, and to use whatever we have. And we had always big uranium deposits. Uranium, we are one of the countries. Of course, that time during when we were part of the Soviet Eastern Bloc, majority of our uranium was taken to the Soviet Union. But we had capability. We have very good, technically good able people. So our first nuclear power plant was built in 80s. And now Czechia, we have around 30% of our electric energy is produced by nuclear power, because another 60% was produced by the coal, which is within the climate change, within the global warming, we were trying to limit using of fossil fuel. And of course the problem was another, this was horrible pollution that we had with the burning coal, because our coal is, we call it brown coal, is not, it's a, we mine it on surface, and that's why big part of the area close to Germany was very much polluted. And that time Germany, and they were protesting because it was really huge like phase here, the haze coming from some other countries, that's something similar was in the other border with Germany. So that's why we invested a lot into of course the building filter into our power station and coal, and of course focusing on nuclear energy. But you know, nuclear energy in Europe has a lot of people who are protesting, especially we had a lot of conversation, discussion, and even protest on the Austrian side, because we have actually two power stations, which one in Temelin is very close, it's only some 40 kilometers from Austrian border, but of course we are claiming that they are are secure, that they are well maintained, we are open to any kind of inspection, any kind of concern, and so on. And so far, it's over 30 years, we didn't have any accident there. And now, nowadays, when we definitely need to cut off maximum limit our dependency on the Russian gas and oil, because for us, it's 40% of our gas comes from Russia, which some countries have even more, because we managed to build our pipeline system to connect to Germany, and so that we can have Norwegian gas or some Western country. The same actually we did with our pipeline for oil, because when we started to changing our system in 1990, one of the first priority was to cut dependence on Russia, and one of these was on oil and gas. And since that, we are working hard. So even now, for example, when there was the crisis of 2014, we could reverse our pipeline to Slovakia.
It is the necessary difficult decisions made in the past which enables you the energy security now. On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with His Excellency Milan Hupse, Ambassador of the Czech Republic. After the break, we talk about how Malaysia and Czech Republic's relationship can be further improved. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On The Breakfast Grill, we have with us His Excellency Milan Hupse, Ambassador of the Czech Republic. And he's in the hot seat as we earlier talked about the Czech Republic's position in the Russian-Ukraine conflict. But now, Ambassador, let's shift to a bit more of closer relationship between us and Malaysia with the Czech Republic. What are the shared values and areas where we could collaborate much closer together? When you joined and when you stepped foot in Malaysia as an ambassador in 2019, what were the top two or three priorities for you?
It was very exciting. I was very excited to come to Malaysia because Malaysia is our biggest trade partner among ASEAN, which is maybe a surprise for many because Malaysia is not the biggest ASEAN economy. And of course, we have so much bigger country. And the fact is that in the last year, our trade volume was $2.5 billion, which is very big to compare with some other countries. And we are in Malaysia long time. It was even before we established diplomatic relations, because we celebrated last year it was 50th anniversary of diplomatic relations. Unfortunately, our celebrations were done only in a virtual way because we had
the pandemic.
Even my prime minister would like to come to Malaysia, but we couldn't materialize that. But both countries, it's Malaysia and then the Czech Republic or Czechia on my side, we are quite satisfied because there is no pending issue between our countries. We are concentrating on value-added trade because Malaysia is on the very high level of development. My country is traditionally industrial country, so that we are shifting from just bringing hardware across the globe to the more sophisticated, more high-tech cooperation. And of course, it's not only in trade; it is also in education, in cultural exchange, and so on. Because as I said, Malaysia is our very valued.
Well, let's talk about the trade in detail, because many of us tend to consider it or view it more in terms of the manufacturing side. Because as you said, Czech Republic has a very advanced manufacturing industry across. Malaysia also is very much growing in its manufacturing sectors with many hubs here. Where has the trade in terms of manufacturing been right? Where do you see that? Automation, robotics?
Trade is big, but of course it's not balanced because Malaysia for us is quite tough market, but tough market not because we are not competitive, but because it's a lot of restrictions. That's why we are very much pushing up Malaysia to sign free trade agreement with the European Union. Because, for example, Škoda cars are famous it's one of the biggest producers in the world, in the Europe. It's very popular on every market in Australia, here, and then, all in Europe is there. But in Malaysia now, you don't see any. Because when you bring this car here, like the Škoda Superb or Octavia, which can be compared to Toyota Camry or Honda Accord, the same size model. But here is double expensive because then you have 100 and then over 150% of taxation on any kind of duties. It is impossible to sell it because nobody will buy it. And of course, there is many things like that. Of course, we would like to get more things done in the food industry or this phytosanitary, the regulations and so on. Because there is a lot of restriction, administration and then so which are making it not very easy.
So I sense the frustration that you can't seem to get the Malaysian side to get this FTA done with the EU. Am I right to say that? What has been the stumbling blocks from the Malaysian side? Why are they so reluctant to facilitate an open trade here?
It's of course there's a lot of issues because.
What are those issues actually? Where do you think are the issues? Is it the EU's stand on palm oil? Is it that we need to protect specific parts of our industry? When you talk to your Malaysian counterparts here, especially in the Ministry of Trade and Industry, what are their pushbacks?
Of course, the palm oil is one of the things which I think is also not really the issue because European Union is, if I'm not mistaken, the second biggest import of palm oil of Malaysia. Of course, what we have done, a lot of palm oil is used to subsidize to the SS biodiesel, biofuel. And Europe is changing. We're going more to green. We're going more to electric. So that's why our government is stopping subsidizing using any kind of oil into biodiesel. And of course, when you have part of Malaysia, they feel that it's against Malaysia, but there's no formal restriction. So Malaysian oil is used for cosmetic, is used for food. But as I said, big part was using for biodiesel.
So you think that the Malaysian side doesn't understand or just feel slighted that they think because of your overarching legislation on biodiesel, that's why Malaysians here don't want to sign the European FTA. Is that correct?
I would not say that it's just correlation. Of course, there are a few other factors because, as I said, you're protecting your economy, your industry, your natural resources, your many things, your labor market, and so on and so on. That is complex. But I think that because I remember I worked many years in Korea. I spent in Korea for both Koreas, and the same question was about negotiation with Korea about free trade agreement was on the table, and the same. Because Korea was so much closed market in the 90s, you hardly could see any foreign product in Korea. And once the EU convinced that let's sign an open market, it will be beneficial.
Yep.
Now you go to Seoul, you can see Seoul product, and everybody's happy. So that's why I think this is matter of convention, of giving good arguments on the table. And one more second, I would say, I think that there is not enough communication between Malaysia and EU. I'm here 3 years. I don't remember any European foreign minister or prime minister came to Malaysia during the last 3 years.
You could blame them on the pandemic, though. But I think your point is that the communication has been lacking, isn't it?
That is pandemic. But of course, pandemic is over. And of course, maybe partially the Malaysian domestic political situation is more important than the international. So that is, Malaysian also is not traveling out. And what other things about, for example, palm oil, I would like to add. We need Malaysian diplomacy. Malaysian politicians working with the European, going and explain, because if the many times I can hear or read in local newspapers that Europeans are very much concerned about deforestation and other things in Malaysia, and that is not true. But all right, why don't you try to convince the people or bring the journalists and show that look, situation is like this.
So if communication is not forthcoming and that there's really been no proper engagement even at the top, right, political leadership across the board. Perhaps the issue is that for many European leaders, Malaysia doesn't really factor very highly in their thought space, in their mind share, that there are other bigger fish to fry, better, more important to build bilateral relations with Indonesia, with China, India, Malaysia doesn't feature much in the mind share of many European political leaders. So that's why there's been no engagement per se.
But on the other hand, European Union is the, I think, second or biggest foreign investor in Malaysia. We're providing 100,000 of jobs here. We are here everywhere. Everybody knows what is Europe. So I think that's the communication could be much, much wider and deeper because, you know, normal citizens are traveling and the politicians not. That was also in my point when I came here and look at the list who came here for last. My Minister of Foreign Affairs came here in 2015. And of course, we are not the leading country in the EU, but I think my European colleagues, they share something similar. Zealand, that we need to have much more exchange.
That goes without doubt. And I guess one of the key things is, what is the role of the Czech Republic in becoming the effective gateway into Europe, especially into Central Europe, and likewise for Malaysia, for becoming the gateway into Southeast Asia? What does it take, right, to make both Czech Republic and Malaysia the gateways for trade, destined for trade, tourism on both sides?
Because we try with Malaysia to cooperate in every possible way to open our country, to open our economy, to open opportunities. We are starting with selling this hardware, I don't know, some industrial or machinery or the electrical parts, but in recent years, for example, 300 Malaysian medical doctors studied in our country. We have so many Malaysian tourists coming. Now we are training Malaysian airline pilots, which are in Prague. It's something 60 young cadets are there. And then we have many young people going for their PhD and so on. Of course, on the other hand, Malaysia is a good destination for other people who are coming here. I have now on my table, especially after very successful DSA fair, which took place last week, Defense and Security Fair, and it was a lot of talk about not only arms sales or cooperation, but also about the cybersecurity, because our country is very, we have quite a solution. We have quite famous companies, like, for example, Avast used to be a Czech company, and Microsoft and so on. We are excellent in the gaming industry. And that's why we are trying to use all these possibilities. Of course, I'm not talking about the film and so on. We try to expand as possible. Malaysian can travel to my country freely. Now, we do not have any restriction. We don't need any quarantine and so on. You don't need visa. Please come and learn and see, have first-hand experience.
But let's now shift our attention from economic linkages. And you've touched a bit already on the social-cultural linkages between Czech Republic and Malaysia. And I can think of no other better cultural linkage than actually the canvas shoes that I wore to school every day when I was very young. And that those are Bata shoes, right? I think every child here, remembers the day when they've had to clean their white canvas shoes before they hit the school. And so I feel Bata is very much etched into our social-cultural mindset in Malaysia. What are the future brands or the social dynamics that you would like to see Czech and Malaysia relationship progress beyond just our Bata shoes?
Yeah, Bata, Tomáš Bata, founder of the Bata Empire, was, of course, an icon. You can meet him all over the world. And what is amazing, every country thinks that it's their own brand.
Exactly. I never thought it was Czech.
Because his approach to the business was to localize and to let also share local people to work on that. And people were very much involved and they consider it's like their own brand.
Yeah.
And But we have historically, Czechoslovakia before Second World War to 1938 was number 7 economy in the world, which again, not many people know. Of course, everything our future was destroyed first by the war, later by the 40 years of the communism. And we are trying to get back on that track because industrial knowledge is the only thing we have. We don't, as I said before, we don't have natural resources. And brands as Zabatia or Škoda or Java, it's Famiface motorbikes, not many in Malaysia, but Indonesia or India, Pakistan, we have millions of them. Of course, arms industry, by the way, pistol is also Czech word. Nobody knows. It's original Czech word.
And robot as well.
Because of course, with our shifting to high-tech, robot, everybody uses robot, but no, when the robot was come from. Robot was invented by our writer, Karel Čapek, just 100 years ago. In one of the novels, he put robots as a feature, as a structure in his theater play. Those were the creatures who have to be placed hard working, because robota in Czech means hard work, hard labor. So there's come robots from that. And then many other things I can name you at least other few, which we did trace in the human development. I think it's human because it's global and many things don't know. And we are proud of it. Even people don't know of that. But
Ambassador, what a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you for taking your time. On the Breakfast Grill with me today, His Excellency Milan Hupse, Ambassador of the Czech Republic. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.